Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcome to now. This potentially being your last game at Heinz Field.
You know, signs are pointing to it being the last one.
Been under center.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
All I want to do is win the game. That's all that matters to me.
Final score, Pittsburgh 26, Cleveland 14.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Thank you to all the fans and everybody.
I just don't see them hanging it up.
Today's guests from NBC Sports, Peter King. Chargers head coach, Brandon Staley. Plus, Pro Football Hall of Famer, Kurt Warner. And now, it's Rich
Eisen.
Well,
yes, everybody. It's another edition of the Rich Eisen Show because it's a Tuesday and it's the type of day that we like to be on the air. You know, we're not very discriminatory when it comes to days of the week. I mean, a Tuesday or Wednesday or Monday. You know, Saturday and Sunday, we're not on the air, but don't hold that against us.
We would be.
You know, I have another job, too, sometimes, and anyway, hey, welcome to this program.
Hi.
I don't know where that start came from. Good to see you, Chris Brock.
This is not my final home game. I just want to point that out.
Oh, that's good. There's not, another week next week.
Not my final home game.
That's good. Another week next week.
Yeah.
Terrific. And I would say I'll know that you're done by the fact that you just take off your shirt and leave, but you'd like to take your shirt off. So, you mean you're like the Bert Kreischer of the Rich Eisen Show over there.
I'll take it.
How are you, Mike Deltu?
I'm doing well, Rich. Good morning. Good morning.
TJ Jefferson, how are you, sir? Good to see you.
Rich, I am super tired. I was up to like 3 a.m. watching Wrestle Kingdom 16 from Tokyo, Japan this morning.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it was rough.
Are you serious?
What is happening?
I was up late, yeah. Yeah, it was live from Tokyo Dome in Tokyo, Japan. Didn't start till midnight.
The home of the Buster Douglas knockout of Mike Tyson.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Wrestle Kingdom, New Japan. Let's go.
So it's Buster Douglas beats Mike Tyson here, and now what's it called? Wrestle Kingdom.
Wrestle Kingdom.
Does it come close to the shocker of Buster beating Mike Tyson?
I don't think anything comes close to that.
Okay. No. Did that happen in the Tokyo Dome, or I just know it happened in Tokyo?
I think you're right.
At any rate, welcome to the show. Should we start again? Here on NBC Sports on Peacock.
I may take my shirt and walk off.
Careful now.
You going to the Nets game tonight?
Oh, my gosh. Big Ben is a victorious quarterback in his final home game at Heinz Field.
Told you guys.
And, I know you said you told us.
I did. It wouldn't be close. That game should have been 40-0. Browns stink.
It was ugly, man.
Jeez. Yeah.
It was ugly. It wasn't pretty. Even Big Ben admitted as such last night, but it doesn't matter. Because the pretty part of it was the walk-off, you know?
Yeah, that was cool.
The walk-off. Because he told us, I guess I'm using the royal we since I was the one who talked to him, but for Westwood One, but we replayed it on this show yesterday.
You speak for all of us.
Thank you very much. Yeah. He did say that he was going to disappear and he's done. Mm-hmm. And that shot of him walking down the tunnel, holding his wife's hand, and then one hand of one of his three kids who were then holding the hands of everybody else in the world, like five Roethlisbergers walking down the tunnel.
That was dope.
That shot of them walking away from the camera down the tunnel together as a family, just the five of them, no cameras following them, no members of the staff, just being left alone to have that moment together. That was kind of a that's all folks shot right there. And and the Steelers win a game for Big Ben and for themselves. And Tomlin said he was exhausted by the end of the night. And, you know, again, Ben's numbers, he threw it 46 times for 123 yards. There are a lot of drops. There are a lot of misfires.
A lot of two-yard outs.
There's a lot of that. But the way to win for the Steelers this year, and this is what we were talking about, is a lot of Najee and whatever T.J. Watt can give you if he's healthy. And when he's healthy, he can give you a lot. And he had five tackles, three for loss, and four sacks, and knocked down a couple balls too last night. A full, you know, defensive player of the year single game effort right there. He's a game shy of the sack record. And I know there's going to be a lot of conversation this week, and we'll even have it on this show throughout the week about what an extra regular season game is now, a 17th regular season game, and what that means for a sack record or a rushing record or a receiving record like Cooper Kupp has in his sights. But Watts missed a couple games this year.
Yep.
And he's still within a sight of breaking Strahan's single season sack record mark. Right? And so that's the recipe. And the Steelers are still alive because of it. And just thinking about Roethlisberger, just for me, you know, I interviewed him when he was a kid coming out of Miami of Ohio on the set of NFL Total Access. And he was talking about how he likes to wear number 7 because it's Bond, you know. And not many people knew about him. I mean, that was the draft in which Eli was the conversation nonstop about would the Chargers really take him when he says, I don't want to be taken. And then there was that kid from NC State by way of the state of Alabama, also available in the draft. And the Giants needed a quarterback, as we know, and they wound up swapping Phillip Rivers, who they selected for Eli Manning, and Roethlisberger dropped, and he dropped past the Browns and wound up with the Steelers, and a former Brown, who was a Steeler head coach, took him. And he and Cowher were an interesting blend, to say the least. Ben was the game manager when he started. He was the don't screw it up. He was the kid who got the start out of nowhere. And I remember Alan Faneca, who he'll share a bus room with, was like, yeah, we're not too excited about a rookie starting. Not too excited about what he's, you know, and our hopes are in this kid's hands. And he was dynamite. And then he won the Super Bowl. But as we know, Hines Ward was the MVP of that Super Bowl. It was Bettis's farewell. Roethlisberger won a second Super Bowl for Pittsburgh. And he should have been the MVP of that game, to be very honest with you, because the catches that Santonio Holmes was making in that game, certainly in the game-winning drive for that game, somebody had to throw it to him. And Roethlisberger was dynamite. But Holmes is the one who made that catch, and to use the Ohio State phrase for him, dotted the I in the back of the end zone. And he's the Super Bowl MVP. So you could really make the case that last night was Big Ben's moment, about him, for him. And I know there's a lot of people who can't forget all of his off-the-field transgressions and might even be very upset with the way that I'm describing those. Just Google it. But Roethlisberger, you could say last night was his moment, about him, for him, love and affection, nothing but love and affection for him in his direction, nationally watched, nationally discussed, nationally revered, for the first time in his career. You could really say that. I remember after he won in Detroit for that Super Bowl in which Bettis said farewell and Cowher took that dub, and we all know he left. And I remember Ben didn't come to our post-game show. We had Bettis, we had Cowher, but not the quarterback. And by the way, that was 3 years in a row to start NFL Network's coverage of the Super Bowl. We didn't get Brady the first year. We didn't get Brady the second year. We didn't get Ben that year. And we're all like, is it us? Like,
was it
something like sniffing under our arms?
Was
like,
it something I said?
Eli, after beating Brady, then the next year was the first. Because Peyton didn't come the year after that, because I think he was upset that Dion talked about how the Colts steal signs in our pregame show. I think he was not happy about that. Then the next year, Eli was the first guy to ever show up. We're like, what's going on? But anyway, Ben didn't show up because he didn't have a great game in that Super Bowl. You know? But
they
did win it.
In spite of him, yeah.
Well, he was the game man. And that was his relationship with Cowher, too. It was kind of like when Tomlin came in, he could be now the man as opposed to the kid. And then as the man, they won the Super Bowl. But we're talking about Harrison's pick six We're talking about Santonio Holmes MVP. That's why last night kind of was that moment. Signs, we love you, Big Ben. Thank you, Big Ben. And then he and his wife and his family with that beautiful moment down the tunnel. And that's all, folks. Unless, of course, they make the playoffs, which is possible. Not likely, as they say in the business, but possible. And then later on in this program, we're going to give you every last playoff scenario that is now official for week 18. There's three AFC teams sniffing it, hoping that the Colts and Chargers stumble. Chargers and Raiders on Sunday Night Football. And head coach Brandon Staley of the Chargers will be joining us in about an hour. Kurt Warner, who called last night's Monday Night Football game and lost that Super Bowl to Ben Roethlisberger, and will give us his 2 cents on Baker Mayfield. He's in hour number three. Peter King's coming up as well. Let's get to Baker for a few minutes here. You know, I cape for him. I've been caping for him. And for all those who cape for Baker, we didn't have much to say last night. He said after the game that he is hurt. He needs surgery on his left shoulder, the one that got separated by J.J. Watt. I mean, has he seen enough of the Watt family or what?
Not a fan.
J.J. separates his left shoulder. T.J. is just all over him last night. Excuse me, I'm allergic to just talking about it.
Hey, tight.
Thank you. And he sacked 9 times. By the way, I said the number correct, right?
That's a lot.
He was sacked nonstop last night. The Mannings, Peyton was just in disbelief at how few times they were running Nick Chubb, who apparently has a rib injury of his own he's dealing with. They had a rookie tackle. I mean, the injuries up front and so on and so forth. Everybody's got him. I understand everybody's got him. And Baker clearly has him, too.
So why is he playing?
Why is he playing is a good question. I think he's not going to play the final week. I think we're going to see Case Keenum finish up this season. He already basically said he's going to talk to his agent and his wife and his family about this thing. I think enough's enough. The games, you know, last night was a Monday nighter. He wants to play. He's coming off of a 4-interception performance in front of the whole country on Christmas Day. Of course he wants to play. He is a gamer. He is a gamer. You got to give it up to him as being a gamer. And he also makes incredible throws that just jump off the screen. And then he'll do stuff like take sacks on 3rd and 2 when the guy's wide open, a check down right in front of him. There'll be times he'll just airmail it. He's way too inconsistent this year. Way too inconsistent this year is the ultimate. But he's still better than Case Keenum. And what is the alternative for Cleveland? What do you do? What do you do if you're the Cleveland Browns? Do you sign him long-term off of this year and him unable to remain healthy? I don't think you can. I think you let him play out his 5th year, which is unfortunate for him. But this was a step-back season. Whether it is of his own doing, whether it is of the doing of COVID gods, what football injury gods, his coach taking a step back and some of the play calling is bizarre. One time during the Manning cast last night, Eli couldn't believe they were rolling him out to his left, making him pirouette and spin to his left. He goes, the guy's got an injured left shoulder. He's right-handed. What are you doing? These running plays with D'Ernest Johnson or Nick Chubb minus Kareem Hunt. Let's not forget, he was injured for half the year too. These running plays are working and they're not running them. Too many question marks to sign him long term, to give him a contract that's worth $30 million per. And midseason, I was thinking he's the guy definitely for the future. And I would certainly, compared to others in his draft class, he's a long way from Josh Allen, and he's a long way from Lamar Jackson, and he's ahead of Sam Darnold. He's ahead of Sam Darnold. Mm-hmm. But you know, in terms of other quarterbacks that you're wondering are long-term people, you know, like Daniel Jones, you already know Baker's got the gamer in him. He's won a playoff game. He won a playoff game in Heinz Field where he got tarred and feathered and put in a football body bag last night. But if you're a Browns fan thinking you got to move on from him right now, I think you're making a mistake. I think there's a fifth-year option that you got to let him play out and see what Stefanski could do with him and maybe get him another big-game receiver and commit to the run. Certainly, if everything in your passing game is playing off the run, commit to it and hope for better health up front. But this was a disappointing season for the Browns. There's no other way to put it. The step forward was supposed to be like week one, going to Kansas City and winning for this team and franchise in a way you couldn't the previous year, and they didn't this year, and then everything began to just unravel. Way too inconsistent. Soup to nuts, and that includes the quarterback. And I might be unfair. We don't know how hurt he is. I mean, the guy was put together by, you know, tape and braces and everything. Knees and shoulders. I mean, hey, it's like head, shoulders, knees, and toes, like the kids' song. You know? But in this day and age where long-term second contracts in the NFL start annually for first overall draft choices or MVP players with a high three or a low four, I mean, the Browns can't do that right now. They just can't. And that pains me to say it. But I'll always shoot you straight here. Peter King's going to join us coming up next. Lost amongst all the conversation about Week 17 and the Week 18 playoff scenarios and, of course, the passing of John Madden was the passing of Dan Reeves, mm-hmm. Who, I'll just say this, Dan Reeves, 9 Super Bowls as a player, assistant, or head coach. 9. That's the most in the history of the NFL of anybody who's coached and played in a Super Bowl. 2 as a player, 3 as an assistant, 4 as an HC. He also is the only person with multiple Super Bowl appearances as a coach and a player. No one's ever done that. Also, along with Vic, first head coach to win a road playoff game in Lambeau.
That's right.
Elway's guy, they went to so many mountaintops, couldn't make it. You know, head coach in Atlanta, head coach for the New York Giants. Always with a certain level of class and calmness. Also, the first coach to appear in an NFL Network promotional ad. In the Being Rich Doesn't Suck spot. When I was in there in the film room in Atlanta with him and Vic.
That's great.
And I'll never forget meeting him. And he's just like, you know, welcome to the NFL. What's the NFL Network? And I'm like, good question. I'll let you know when we start. But thanks for doing this spot, Coach.
He should probably be in the Hall of Fame.
Well, right? I mean, you know, he's got the resume for it. It's just that the Dubs is the HC is in those spots.
I had no idea.
Lacking.
He threw a touchdown in the ice bowl.
Yes, mm-hmm. In the ice bowl.
That's insane.
Yes, as a
halfback.
Option,
halfback.
Correct. A halfback option, touchdown pass in the ice bowl for the Dallas Cowboys. Yes, sir.
Yeah. You know, he was a quarterback for the Gamecocks in college, so, you know, he wasn't unfamiliar with throwing the ball.
190 games as a head coach.
It's serious resume, and he passed away, and we'll talk about him and everything else going on. Certainly the latest with Antonio Brown, who's no longer a Buck, except he's still a Buck. What's up with that? I've got a couple cents on that as well, but let's take a break. 844-204-RICH is also the number to dial. We're also going to have New Year's resolutions today. Rest in peace for a long time. Also, device that used to be everywhere. Actually, was discontinued today. We'll let you know about that. So much to talk about here on the show. But Peter King of NBC Sports will be joining us next on The Rich Eisen Show.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Hey, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Love this man, love his work. It's must-read material every single Monday morning for football morning in America. Joining me here once again on NBC Sports on Peacock is a Hall of Famer. He is Peter King. How are you doing, Peter?
Hey, Rich, you know what was really, really fun in my column on Monday?
What's
and look,
that?
I get a kick out of these kind of football nerdy things. Going back and seeing how Cooper Kupp was scouted. And finding out from Les Snead that his first encounter with Cooper Kupp was when he was a camper at the Peyton Manning, at the Manning Passing Academy in Thibodaux, Louisiana in 2015. I don't know. Those are things that are just so much fun that when you're just asking questions and talking to people, you discover little tiny factoids like that. And it just is a lot of fun. That led the Los Angeles Rams, then the St. Louis Rams, that led the Los Angeles Rams in 2017 in Sean McVay's first year to draft Cooper Kupp. Anyway.
No, Peter, I love Peter. Peter,
you know, one of the things that was fun for me this week.
I love stories like that, Peter. I mean, let's not forget that potentially the MVP for a fourth time in this league and back-to-back in this league was a quarterback at Butte College. And Jeff Tedford, the Cal coach, went to Butte College to look at a tight end there. And he's like, who's this quarterback that's here? And that's how Aaron Rodgers wound up at Cal. And we all know the rest is history. And there's so many stories like that. I love them. I absolutely love stories like that. You know,
and how about going back to the guy who preceded him to Brett Favre at Southern Miss and 6 weeks before he starts his senior year at Southern Miss. He's in a horrible car wreck, gets 30 inches of his intestine removed.
Oh, God.
He's playing with a bag, and he goes to Florida State. Was it Florida State? He went somewhere to some huge school and beat him. And just, you know, those are the kind of things that you sort of remember when you think about the really great players. And that, never mind Tom Brady lasting to the end of the sixth round.
Right.
You know, behind Gio Carmazzi. I mean, 100 picks behind Gio Carmazzi, for crying out loud.
I know.
Anyway,
everyone's got a story. So you mentioned Kupp, Peter. Where do you stand on the concept of this now 17th regular season game and records that can be broken with a 17th regular season game? You know, especially, I mean, I saw the Patriots tweeted out that Mac Jones set the record for touchdown passes by a Patriots rookie breaking Jim Plunkett's record, but somebody pointed out Plunkett did that in 14 regular season games and Mac's done it in 16 with a 17th to boot. So there have been these asterisks for decades. I'm wondering about the newest one in your estimation, Peter.
Well, just as, when Roger Maris hit his 61st home run, you know, to surpass Babe Ruth, in more than 154 games, which is how many games that Babe Ruth, that was the length of the season when Ruth hit 60. That's just the way a season is now. And mentally, you can have an asterisk about it because for 43 seasons, the NFL played 16 games. And I think it's beyond idiotic that they went to a 17th game when they're always screaming about player safety. But be that as it may, whatever a guy gets in a season, he got that in a season. And you can mentally think that if for some reason Cooper Kupp passes Michael Thomas or whatever records he sets, you ought to asterisk him. But, I mean, I'm probably not going to do that. I'm going to make a point that that's just the way it is. I mean, there could be 17 games for the next 43 years. I doubt it, but there might be. And so I just think that's the way you have to do it.
Peter King here on the Rich Eisen Show. I guess I'll use the few good men phrasing. If Antonio Brown is no longer a Buck, then why hasn't he been cut so far? What do you make of this, Peter? What's happening?
The only thing I can make of it, Rich, and I've done zero reporting on this, but when I heard about this late yesterday, I said the Bucks are most likely consulting with the NFL about how to get out of his contract, get out of paying him. trying to pay him the least amount of money that they can. And so I think it has something to do with that. Rich, I simply can't believe, as some have floated, that, hey, who knows, maybe some desperate team, knowing that it, it would only be for 3 or 4 weeks, might just bring him in for the rest of this year. And I just said, man, if I were an owner and my coach said, hey, I know this is a terrible idea and blah, 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 but, you know, we could really use the help. The owner would say, you know, let's start with your first sentence. This is a terrible idea and we're not doing it. I hope nobody brings him in. Antonio Brown needs help, not another extension of his football career.
Well, I mean, what coach would do that, though? You know what I'm saying? Because just – Look at every single coach.
I can't think of one. But if for some reason somebody would have that thought, it needs to be roundly disabused at the moment of conception of that thought.
Peter King here on the Rich Eisen Show. What is the Browns' plan, do you think, for Baker Mayfield, now that we've seen an absolute step back from last year with circumstances beyond Baker's control? We have no idea what did happen with Odell Beckham. We did see what Odell Beckham did for the Rams just last week in Baltimore. And so what do you make of Baker Mayfield's future and what the Browns' plans for him might be?
I don't know what the Browns are going to do with Baker Mayfield, but I can tell you what is the only plan to me that makes any sense, and that is have him play next year at his $18.8 million one-year contract when they exercise the 50-year option on him. Have him play under that contract for 1 year. And then say, hey, hopefully we'll have a long-term marriage here, but there's no way we can commit to you right now. I think it's obvious that, and if Baker Mayfield takes that as a slap in the face, that's the way it goes. I mean, you just, you know, play, sing for your supper, and we'll see what happens a year from now. I don't know how anybody, Andrew Berry, Jimmy Haslam, Kevin Stefanski, could in any way make a serious argument that, hey, let's sign Baker Mayfield for 5 years at an average of $38 million a year. And look, a lot of this, his play this year might be because of his injury. There's a very good chance that that's possible. But Rich, in the last six games, 9 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 53% completions. That is what you would want to extend at $1 jillion a year. Leave me out of that one.
Yeah, I guess you need to see what happens with surgery and then move forward. But and if he crushes it next year, then you have the ability to franchise tag him and sign him long term if he wants to stay there. I don't know what the relationship is there, right? Or do you, what are you hearing about Baker with the Browns?
I think the relationship is fine.
Okay.
I don't think that is it, Rich, at all. I think it is that, and I'm sure that there are some things, that bother him about whatever has happened in Cleveland in his 4 years, and there's some things that happen that I'm sure bother the front office. But there's nothing in there to suggest any sort of divorce is imminent. I just don't believe it. And I just simply feel right now that it would be irresponsible for the Browns to pay him like a franchise quarterback, because based on what we've seen, we simply don't know. I think, to me, the crowning blow was the game in Green Bay. That was a game that the Browns could have, should have won, as crazy as it sounds. But Baker Mayfield handed the game to Matt LaFleur on a silver platter. And, you know, when something like that happens, you just have to say, look, there's a chance that this is injury-related, but we can't risk the financial future of this team on a guy that we're not sure about.
A few more minutes left with my friend Peter King from NBC Sports, right here on NBC Sports on Peacock, Sirius XM, and also this terrestrial Rich Eisen Show radio outfit. Much, obviously, made of Big Ben's finale in front of the home folks in Pittsburgh. Did Russell Wilson have an old-school three-touchdown pass game to DK, four overall, big-time game in front of the 12s as a finale? What do you make of what's the future in Seattle, Peter?
I don't know, Rich. I think, and I hate to keep saying I don't know, but that one is a weird one, because last year at this time, Russell Wilson was clearly unhappy about what was going on in Seattle. I can't imagine that a whatever they're going to be, 6-11, whatever their record is going to be, I can't imagine this season has soothed Russell Wilson's thought about playing the rest of his career in Seattle. And look, John Schneider is, to me, one of the smartest, most progressive general managers who I've ever covered. I think he's really, really bright. He's had his misses, but they all have. And all I know is that John Schneider will not be afraid whatever the outcome is. He's the guy who, you know, came in and told Pete Carroll after the, I think, 2011 Big Ten championship in Indianapolis, when he outdueled Kirk Cousins. I think he came back into the office after that and he told Pete, we got our quarterback. I mean, we got to go get Russell Wilson in the draft next year. And, you know, so he's not going to be afraid. But whatever they decide, I think a lot of it should be decided by a frank conversation, and not one in the media, but a frank conversation between Wilson and both Schneider and Pete Carroll. Is Pete Carroll going to stay? Do the Seahawks want him to stay? You know, those are the questions that we just don't know the answers to yet.
I know, but if you took your best guess, mine would be Pete stays, Russell doesn't. What would that be?
That would be my guess.
Right.
I'm not a big fan of that strategy. You know, I would rather have it be the opposite, because, quite frankly, it's a lot harder to find a top quarterback than it is to get a coach who you can win with. But you know, hey, we'll see what happens, and we'll see if the we'll see what Pete Carroll wants. I would assume that Pete Carroll would like to stay. He signed for a long time, whatever, the next 5 years. I would think he would want to stay. And we'll see what Jody Allen really wants to do at the end of this year, and then what Russell Wilson wants to do.
In the 3 minutes I have left with you, Peter King, lost amongst everything that we just discussed, and of course the passing of the iconic John Madden, was the fact that Dan Reeves passed away.
Yeah.
And I'd love to give you the floor on your favorite Reeves story that might lend folks an insight into his legacy in the NFL.
My favorite Reeves story is not a football one, but my wife worked at a social welfare agency in New Jersey when I lived in Jersey, and Reeves was the coach of the Giants. And Dan Reeves was really, really a good person who was like interested in the whole person of both of his players and people who he knew. And I just happened to mention this one day, and he said, hey, anything I can ever do to help, that's such a great thing, to be helping youth in Newark and in places like that. And I happened to mention, I said, well, what would you think about if we tried to auction off a meal for you and maybe for whoever bids the most for this meal, and the benefits will you know, the money will go to this agency. And he said, I'd love to do it. I'll do it. So we did it. We went to a nice Italian place and near the stadium, and the bill comes and he won't let me pay. And he was magnanimous. He was great. He was a great storyteller, talking about the Ice Bowl and everything. And it was great. And 2.5 hours later, he walked out and it paid the check himself. So he's just, you know, a good human being and rich. I'll just say this, and I wrote this in my column. I think we at the Hall of Fame, the voters at the Hall of Fame, should really try to push for a little bit of a different way with people like Dan Reeves, because for years it's been, if you're a coach, you're judged as a coach. If you're a player, you're judged as a player. So theoretically, Dick LeBeau could not be judged. He could be judged as one or the other, but not both, which I think is silly. Dick LeBeau's contributions to the NFL go far beyond his 62 interceptions
right.
for the Lions, mostly in the 60s, playing next to Night Train Lane. But that's how we were supposed to vote. And same with John Madden, you know, voted only as a coach. He's one of the biggest contributors, if not the biggest, in the history of the game. So in my opinion, Reeves, who threw a touchdown, he threw a touchdown pass in the Ice Bowl. I think it's not only that he won Coach of the Year for three different franchises, that he led two different franchises to the Super Bowl. I think he has had a very worthy Hall of Fame career.
Well said, Peter King. Happy New Year to you and yours. Let's do this very often this next month where all rubber meets road. Thanks for the time.
Sounds great, Rich. Take care.
That's Peter King right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Yeah, I mean, there's a contributor column, you know. There's a coach column. There's a player column. Contributor column is how the Sables got in, for instance, right?
Right, yep.
And there's the coach column and the player column, and now there's multiple choices for coach and contributor switching back and forth from year to year, so they're letting more people in. I mean, why not? I mean, they're expanding at the Hall of Fame. It's not that big a deal to let more coaches in. Dick Vermeil has finally gotten to be a finalist. And this guy, I know he won a Super Bowl with the Rams and he lost one with the Eagles, but his contributions to the game in terms of his broadcasting, in terms of his nonstop contact with other coaches, and his history going way back, and all the analytics that you're talking about now, he was one of the first coaches to employ that sort of stuff. I mean, I hope his reaching the finalist level means he's going to get the stamp. He deserves it, and somebody like Reeves does to Coughlin while he's still above ground, you know? I mean, we could go on and on here. There's always going to be snubs for Hall of Fames or Halls of Fame, however you want to put it, but, you know, Dan Reeves, may he rest in peace. Well done there, Peter King. We'll take your phone calls when we come back. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. There is a playoff clinching scenario out there that is some playoff clinching scenario I have not seen in my 18 years of doing this. That's coming up next.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Back here on our terrestrial radio outfit. And we just had a caller on Peacock ask me if I would reorder the 2004 draft class where Eli went 1 and then Phillip went 4, I believe, to the Giants, and they swapped picks a la like an NBA draft. Yep. And then Ben went 11th. Right, to the Steelers.
Jonathan Vilma. He could have been the Jets quarterback, Ben.
I was hoping they were going to take him.
How about this?
Because, again, when I interviewed Ben Roethlisberger, he walked into the studio at NFL Total Access, and he just kept going when he walked through the door. Like, he was monster big. And I'm like, this guy throws on the run, and we were starting to show some Miami of Ohio tape because clearly, mea culpa, I wasn't watching a lot of Miami of Ohio football games.
Not. All right, I got one for you.
But
bigger what-if draft scenario for New York sports. Curry goes 1 ahead of the Knicks.
Yeah.
Roethlisberger 1 ahead of the Jets.
Meaning what?
Meaning, like, what if they had fallen one more pick to your team?
Oh, okay. So you just want to keep kicking me in the nuts? Is that what you want to do? Or
like, I thought it
was just like, which one would I rather have let fall down?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
That's what you mean.
Yeah,
what I mean.
I would Steph Curry in a heartbeat.
Over Big Ben and the Jets?
Yeah, yeah.
So you're a bigger Knicks fan than you are a Jets fan? Yeah,
well, at the time, I would have taken, because at the time, when wasn't Chad there? I mean, like the Chad Pennington and the Jets had just like, they had beaten the crap out of Tony Dungy's Peyton Manning Colts in the playoffs. You know, Herm was, you know, you play to win the game, Herm, you know, in 2004.
Yeah, Jets were 8-5 and
so
04.
Curry dropping to the Knicks?
06.
Oh, please.
You know, 10-6.
And Ben is an all-time great in Pittsburgh, and he's a Hall of Famer, but Curry's like one of the all-time greats, period. Any era, anywhere, anytime. Please.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought of it.
I mean, you had Brooks Bollinger in 2005, Rich. You might.
Brooks Bollinger.
Well, I mean, there was the next step was a doozy in 04.
This is what the greatest thing about sports is.
Thank you.
You play to win the game.
Thank you very much. But in terms of reordering I mean, Ben and Eli both won two, right? Ben went to a third, lost it to Aaron Rodgers. Ben had off-the-field stuff that Eli never remotely had, but clearly, you know, has turned his life around. I mean, you're talking about the full scope of everything. Ben was a more consistent winner in division year in and year out than Eli was with the Giants.
I think it kind of worked out perfectly for all
everybody.
Three teams. Yeah, yeah.
Now, this is sports talk radio. Would you train? I mean, that's what I was literally asked a question by a sports talk radio listener.
It's funny. Ben and Phil have basically the exact same stats.
Man, Phil just never made it to a Super Bowl.
Ben Roethlisberger, 417 touchdowns. Phillip Rivers, 421. Ben has Phil by 400 passing yards. They have the exact same number of interceptions.
Damn.
Ben plus one. Ben played four more games than Phillip.
What a class.
Unbelievable.
I know in the Manning cast, they were talking about the 83 draft in relation to 2004.
You're going to get three Hall of Famers in the top 11 picks at quarterback.
And I guess Brooks Bollinger would be the Ken O'Brien of that equation.
I guess.
I don't even bring it up. Todd Blackledge, who we hear in calling games, he was part of that class too, man. Yeah. Tony Eason.
Won a national title with Penn State.
Tony Eason.
All right. I have been doing this thing, this NFL-only thing with the NFL Network for 18 years, 19 NFL seasons, and I have never seen a week 18 scenario, final week of the season scenario, play out like this one. When Pittsburgh won on Monday night, that set up the following playoff scenario for the Pittsburgh Steelers. They have to win their game. We've seen that before, right? And they've got to hope for another loss like the Colts losing, which is unfortunate for them because they play the Jaguars. They got to hope for another loss. And then they have to hope that the Raiders-Chargers game does not end in a tie. I don't recall ever seeing words like that. Now, Big Ben going to Baltimore and beating the Ravens, we've seen that before. Yep. The Colts losing to the Jaguars is a tall order, Nordberg. That's a tall order, using a police squad phrase. That's a very tall order. And then they just have to hope that there's a result in the Sunday night football game between the Chargers and the Raiders that is just not a tie. Now, that sets this up. Let's just say the Ravens lose to the Steelers. Let's say the Ravens lose to the Steelers and the Steelers get their win. Let's just say the Jaguars find some sort of, who the hell knows what it would be. Like, you can't say fountain of youth. They're all young. I mean, just whatever it is. They lightning in the old bottle. Whatever idiom you want to come up with. Let's just say the Jaguars beat the Colts. And you'll just say, oh, so what? So the Chargers and the Raiders doesn't end in a tie, Rich. What does that mean? Because what this means is if the Chargers and Raiders do end in a tie, it not only eliminates Pittsburgh, but it puts both the Chargers and the Raiders in. Meaning the win or go home game, the winner in, loser go home game that the NFL had dropped in its lap, and NBC has had dropped in its lap, because it did not look like we were going to get this scenario. We had Al Michaels on a couple weeks ago, and we were struggling to look over the steering wheel prior to week 16 to identify the game that everybody in the NFL and NBC wants to have. Winner in, loser out. That game would be rendered moot if the Steelers win and the Colts lose, if the Chargers and Raiders decide to just do nothing. Like show up on Sunday Night Football and do nothing.
Nothing.
And just tie.
Tie.
And people are talking about it, and I'd like to just say this. Like, how do y'all see that playing out? Like, the Chargers, Brandon Staley calls up Rich Bisaccia and just says, what, Telesco calls up Mayock and say, how about we just tie? And what do you do? What does that mean? Just everybody just snaps the ball and takes a knee and punts?
Yep.
And then they snap the ball and take knees and punt? And then you do that for four quarters in front of the whole country and then do that for an entire 10-minute overtime period and make sure nobody gets a yard for the entire game. Is that really the way it's supposed to go? And the wild thing is, you really think so? Like, that's the way it's really supposed to go?
I mean, how else would you orchestrate this?
You don't orchestrate it.
Throw a couple interceptions here and there.
What are you talking about?
I mean, it's just...
If people are like, well, why wouldn't the Chargers and Raiders? Both would be... It's mutually assured success.
They both make the playoffs. Yeah,
not
exactly.
Destruction.
Success.
It's mutually assured success. Hey, we both want to make it, right?
Right.
I want to make it. You want to make it.
Absolutely.
Let's just not have any competition in front of the whole country, where, by the way, a huge to-do was made out of one team pulling a starting quarterback in this game last year.
I think they should just go sit in the middle of the field and just like
and just do what?
Run.
And do what?
Just
like have a conversation?
Yeah.
Play paper, rock, scissors.
Yeah. Middle of the field.
Here's the wild thing, folks. We've got Brandon Staley coming up in 5 minutes. We get to ask him this idiot question.
Won't he be so excited?
Not going to
entertain this.
Do you have Rich Bisaccia's phone number? My first question to Brandon Staley when we come back.